This is ESPN Radio.
Kane Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We got plenty of great ones still coming up. We'll talk to Mike Reese, our ESPN Patriots reporter, Lewis Riddick from Monday Night Football, and get you guys all set to go for the action coming up later. We also want to remind you about some college football action you can tune into this Saturday. Alabama State hosting Texas Southern. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus and on the SXM app for free for most SiriusXM subscribers. You can catch all of that, but we got plenty of games to get to leading up to that point as well. So for more help on that, we're going to head out to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to our friend Stanford Steve, co-host of Stanford Steve and the Bear Podcast, wherever you get your podcast. And Steve, we got an interesting one. Thursday Night Football coming up tonight here. The Atlanta Falcons and the New England Patriots. Pats, 6.5-point favorites. Are we going to continue to ride this Mac Jones wave? Do you think they actually start scoring enough points to cover this?
I don't know. It feels like a lot like last week, guys. You know, last week, you know, I think it was Chris, you asked me about the Dolphins and what to do with that game with the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sometimes you just got to hold your nose and go the other way. And that's exactly what happened. Miami played their best defensive game of the year. Baltimore was not ready off a short rest. And now it sort of feels the same. You know, New England's got to go on the road. We know they got the young quarterback. You guys were just talking about him from earlier in the show. And it doesn't make sense, but I could totally see Atlanta hanging around this game. Listen, the recency bias of how bad Atlanta looked against Dallas and how good New England looked against Cleveland, that's tough to get out of your mind. So I would lean taking the points here with the home team on a Thursday night with Matt Ryan and his experience.
Steve, I got to ask you about the matchup of the week. Dak Prescott and Pat Mahomes tangling for the first time in their careers. Mm. The Cowboys taking the trip to Arrowhead. And the Chiefs are 2.5-point favorites with the over-under being at 56. Where do you see value in this matchup?
Well, I think it's two sides here, Chris. You know, obviously, Kansas City demands the respect of the guys making the lines out in Vegas because they're favored in what seems like they got right in one win. You know, in Las Vegas. But if you're a believer in Dallas, which I am, I like them in this spot. I think they're, when you look at its totality, the roster of offense combined with the defense, I still think Dallas has plenty of options to go at that Kansas City defense. So I like Dallas. I think Dak's my MVP of the league. I think that's why he's just going to keep going up the way he's played and the toys he has to play with on that offense, man. They are legit in the defense with Mike Quinn, or I should say Dan Quinn, sorry, calling that and seeing him get the game ball last week. Like, I love the story of the Dallas defense because it feels genuine. They really seem like they put in the work and gone back and done the things and played defense and called defenses the way that Quinn wants to. And I give McCarthy a lot of credit for letting him do that and just taking over the defense in its fullness.
Speaking of defense and recency bias here on Canty and Golic Jr., the Buffalo Bills used the Jets' own arm to beat them to death last week, and so the recency bias might be to overweight that. They're 7-point favorites against the Indianapolis Colts, Steve. Should we buy that?
I look at the Colts with an opportunity here, guys. Listen, is Wentz the most trustworthy guy? No, we know that. But when you look at the defense of the Colts, I kind of like how it matches up against Buffalo. Just because Buffalo's just been kind of inconsistent to me, and we're waiting for that state. But 7 points is a lot. Indianapolis has been really good at running the football with Jonathan Taylor, obviously, in that offensive line. They're all healthy now. So I would lean to taking the points there. I know it's not pretty because you're going against Josh Allen in that Buffalo offense in front of the Bills Mafia. But I would take the points. If I was at the game, I'd just be really quiet and, root quietly.
Steve, switching gears and going to college football. I mean, the Ducks are on the road against Utah. They're 3-point dogs. How do you see this one playing out with the Utes and the Ducks tangling it up? It just seems like it's strange for a team that's ranked in the top three of the college football playoff to be dogs on the road, but this seems like it's one of those scary spots for Oregon. What do you see in this matchup?
There's a lot. There's a lot here. And, you know, you guys, are, you know, you're doing radio every day, right? So there's all these narratives out there. It's amazing to me the narrative around Utah compared to Oregon. You know, Utah's got this narrative, oh, they've gotten it right. They're all set. They're fixed. And I don't buy that. I mean, they beat Stanford, who's not good. They beat Arizona, who's not good. They beat UCLA, who didn't have their starting quarterback. And before that, they went to Corvallis and had 260 yards rushed on them. So when I look at Oregon coming in, like, I like the build of Oregon coming in here. I know they're not getting respect with the line. I know everybody's waiting for them to lose to be out of the playoff discussion. But I love the recipe they have. They're going to run the football. When you go back and look 2 weeks ago, they're on the road at Washington. Tough environment, rivalry game. They gave the ball to Dye 28 times. That's what I like to see. That's success. And if you go back 2 years ago, that's how Oregon upset Utah when Utah had a win-and-in situation in the Pac-12 title game. So I lean towards the Ducks in this game because I know what I'm getting. Anthony Brown has a ton of experience, has played in crazy atmosphere, and Salt Lake City is going to be on fire Saturday night. There's no doubt about that. But I like the experience he has, and I think they might get a little more quarterback run in the game. I love Joel Moorhead, the Oregon play caller. So Oregon's going to play to their strengths. You don't have to worry about that. And I feel like Utah's got the pressure on them with being the favorite at home. That's a lot to live up to. So I would lean Oregon in this matchup.
Yeah, Utah's heard them kind of like Purdue dealt with, being talked about as the team for weeks that's supposed to upset this Oregon team at one point down the stretch of this season. But speaking of playoff implications, Steve, we know Sparty and Ohio State squaring off this weekend. The Buckeyes, huge favorite as the Big Ten East starts to sort itself out here. Are the Buckeyes just too much to handle for anyone right now?
I think so. Next week and the week after, you get way better defenses, and that's my problem here with Michigan State, guys. Michigan State's pass defense is horrendous in the bottom of the country. And I will say, I mentioned Michigan State's won every single game on the field as an underdog. This is just a lot taller task. And, you know, it's that strength, that Ohio State offense, right? The passing game. And it's a strength versus a weakness, and it's at home, and it's in Columbus. Like, it feels a lot like last week where if you're buying – now, I will say Michigan State's a lot more capable than Purdue, but is Michigan State going to be able to go score for score with Ohio State? I don't see it happening. The only thing that worries me is that back door of the cover. When you're catching 19 points, it's always open in the fourth quarter. Will Michigan State be able to, you know, slam through that back door with their starters in, or won't they? That's the question. But it's a stay away. I would lean towards the Buckeyes, seeing how they got it rolling offensively last week.
Steve, we can't talk college football without asking you about a SEC matchup. The Arkansas Razorbacks, they were flying high earlier in this season until they ran into the buzzsaw that was the Georgia Bulldogs. But they got a matchup against number two ranked Alabama this weekend. Should the Crimson Tide be on upset alert?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they did not look good in their last conference game. Now, no offense to New Mexico State, who they beat 59-3 last week. We're going to take them out of the mix. I got to think Nick Saban went back to the well and getting that ground game going. They rushed for 6 yards against LSU 2 weeks ago. That was not what Nick wants, because as they move forward in this season, we know they're going to have to run the football to have any success against the likes of Auburn, Georgia, and whoever, if they were to beat Georgia in the playoff. So I think Nick's going to be really conservative with a game plan, and I think Arkansas is also going to struggle to score. I know they rush for 230 a game, but Bama only gives up 84. So I see a low-scoring game. I like the under the total in this game. I think it's around 59, 58 and a half. I think Alabama scores 30, but I don't see Arkansas reaching 20.
Back to betting unders and games involving Alabama. Boy, it's weird how things change in a year here. Steve, we appreciate the time and the insight as always, man. Enjoy the games this weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, guys. Have a good weekend.
Again, check out Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast wherever you get your podcast. See Stanford Steve with Scott Van Pelt on the late night Sports Center all the time here. Coming up next, though, speaking of that SEC, do we really think they're going to do it with Alabama? Does the infatuation continue for the College Football Playoff Committee and the Crimson Tide? We'll book it next on ESPN Radio, and we'll do that after this word from nobody next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We'll talk to Lewis Riddick. Get you set for Thursday Night Football coming up here in about 15 minutes. But right now, as we look around the world of sports, I look down at my watch and realize it's Thursday. Thursday around here means something. Means we got to give you some timely information. Means we got to let you know how to heat up the takes. It means we've got to play Book It. All right, guys, book it. You know the drill. You add book it to any of your hot take. It's a hot take multiplier. It allows you to feel like Stephen A. Smith, if only for a moment.
You can book it.
Put it in the books.
You know what time it is. It's book it time, damn it. All right, for anyone new or not used to the game right here, this is how it's going to work. Our producer is going to lob us up a spicy take. If you like it, you shout book it at the end. You feel good. You feel strong. You feel powerful. And if you don't, you won't. We'll move on here. Stepping up to the plate today. Steve, how are we feeling, man?
Very good. Very good. I'm ready to go.
All right. Fired up. Steve is ready for his book it debut here. Let's lob out these takes and see what you got, Steve.
Got it. First one, Mike. Trayvon Diggs will get his first pick off Patrick Mahomes this week.
Ooh. All right. So we've got Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott squaring off for the first time now. Trayvon Diggs, who has been one of the more boom or bust players in the league this year, coming off a week where Patrick Mahomes seemed to get right, at least for one game. Chris, I won't book this one.
Mm.
I think
really?
If this Chiefs offense is going to go in and actually have success, they figured out it's going to have to be dinking and dunking underneath. I think the nature of Trayvon Diggs is getting people to make that mistake, a mistake the Chiefs made early in this season, but one I believe they're going to make less and less going forward.
Yeah, Gojo, I don't know what's going on today, but you and I are here.
Ooh.
Like, we're here with this one because I can't book this one either.
Damn that.
Exactly, Stephen A. Damn that. It's not going to happen. Pat Mahomes, the last couple of games, he hasn't turned the ball over, and I think that has a lot to do with Andy Reid's strategy in terms of how to manage him. You're seeing teams come out in a lot of shell coverages, two high safeties, so they're taking a lot more underneath throws. A lot more screen passes being called by Andy Reid, a lot more checkdowns, 17 completions to running backs in the last two games. So I think that they're going to do a good job of managing Pat Mahomes early, getting him into the flow of the game with a lot of easy throws underneath, and then waiting until that defense comes down, until they get one-on-one outside man coverage to take shots over the top. So I don't see Trayvon Diggs coming away with an interception off of Pat Mahomes. Not this weekend.
Chris, the Falcons right now are 4-5, and Matt Ryan at 36. Is this going to be his last season in Atlanta?
Nah, I can't book this. I can't book this because what's the Falcons' alternative?
No!
What are the Falcons going to do? Like, they're not going to be bad enough where they're at the top of the draft and they're going to get one of their pick of the best signal callers coming out of college football. It's not a strong class of quarterbacks in 2022. I don't think that there's going to be a veteran quarterback that's looking at the Atlanta Falcons as a destination if they're trying to get out of their current situation. So, yeah, Matty Ice is going to be their quarterback next year. It would have been a different conversation had they done something different with the fourth overall pick this year. But instead of taking Justin Fields or Mac Jones, they went with Kyle Pitts. So you know what? Matt Ryan's going to be their quarterback. And you know what else? Matt Ryan ain't been all bad this year. I get that he's coming off of a performance where it's his lowest career passer rating. But Matt Ryan has got 4 300-yard passing games this season, and the Falcons have won 3 of those games. So Matt Ryan will be their quarterback in 2022. You can go ahead and book that.
Yeah, I know it's technically an out next year, but, like, man, it would still be a $40 million dead cap hit. Like, they moved around a lot of money this past offseason with Matt Ryan in a way that indicated it was going to be pretty hard to move this guy. I think he's played well enough for you up until this point, too, Chris, to earn himself a little bit more goodwill, because you're right, that quarterback class coming out this year ain't it. So unless Atlanta all of a sudden comes into a bunch more ability to pry one of these veteran quarterbacks away, I just don't think any of it's realistic right now.
With all due respect, that's not good enough.
The Packers are 8-2, and they're the number one seed in the NFC right now. Are they the best team in the NFC?
I cannot book this. No, I still think...
Really?
The Dallas Cowboys lay claim to that one here. I got more trust in that offense here. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Dallas Cowboys defense digests this version of Kansas City. I don't think this is one of those games where Kansas City or Dallas necessarily needs a win, but I think we have a chance to learn a ton about a Dallas defense that has to keep checking boxes as the season goes along while that offense buoys it, Chris.
Cosign, retweet. Steve, next question.
No, sir. No.
Chris, Ryan Tannehill's been successful as the Titans quarterback the last 2 years. Is he the most underrated quarterback in the NFL?
Yeah, man. We
got to
start putting some respect on Ryan Tannehill's name. We got to do it. Listen, I know that wins is not a quarterback stat, but he is the guy under center for the team that has the best record in the AFC. And Ryan Tannehill also has the 8th best total QBR in all the NFL. So, I'm not sitting here trying to lay the claim that Ryan Tannehill is an elite quarterback, But Ryan Tannehill is a good quarterback, one that's capable of putting his team in position to win their division, one that's capable of putting his team in a spot where they can win playoff games. So, yeah, we got to start putting a little more respect on Ryan Tannehill's name. He is one of the more underrated quarterbacks in our game.
I can't book this.
Damn that.
In a world where Jalen Hurts exists, I think if we just look at the last month, Chris, you look at the last 4 weeks, any guess which quarterback number one in total QBR right now?
I know what you're going to do.
That would be Jalen Hurts.
I know what you're going to do.
Anyone guess who's fourth in adjusted completion percentage over the last month? That would be Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts, who's played some of his best football as of late. Listen, I'm still not sure if I'm sold on him being the long-term answer, but if we're going to talk about most underrated, we don't talk about this guy hardly at all, and so I feel like him getting a little bit more just due is probably what the doctor ordered, Chris.
I don't understand. You're saying you're not sold on him, but you feel like he's the most underrated. Help me make it make sense, Gojo. Help me help you.
That's called hedging a take, baby. What do we got next, Steve?
Bama and Georgia are the top two teams in the college football playoff. Will they both be in the college football playoff?
No, I absolutely will not book
this one.
I haven't been booking much of anything today, but Chris, I know everyone wants to go with the like close game Georgia theory of them putting two teams in based on them being two for so long, but I think with Gary Barta telling us that 2 through 4 was more of a debate this time around shows us that the footing isn't all that solid, and I just think there are going to be too many teams in that, forget best, most deserving area of all this down the stretch that are going to stress the committee's commitment to that. I think they buckle. I don't think Bama gets in if they've got a second loss. And I think that second loss is coming to this Georgia team, so I can't book this.
Okay, so you're not booking this. I'm not going to book this either, but I'm just curious as to who you see in the Final Four with the college football playoff rankings. Are you seeing multiple Big Ten teams? I mean, are you seeing Cincinnati in this? Who are you exactly seeing in this playoff if Alabama can't make it?
If Alabama can't make it, I mean, looking at it right now, you would have likely a SEC champion in there. Mm-hmm. I think you would have undefeated Cincinnati in there as champions of the American. I think you're going to have one loss Ohio State in there as champions of the Big Ten. And then I can't rule the Big 12 out just yet, Chris. I know there's some chaos in there. Oklahoma State is within shouting distance here. There are just too many other variables around there, including what you mentioned. A potential, you know, Big Ten situation down the stretch with this meat grinder here, just based on how Alabama's look, too. Still got to get through the Iron Bowl, by the way.
Gotcha.
So, okay. There we go. We have booked things here. It's tough, man. The college football playoff machinations, even for someone who does a show about it, are a lot to digest here. So coming up next, we will go to a much easier thing to try and figure out. The long-term future of Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. That'll be easy. We'll get to that after this word from AT&T. Which I got right this time. About that. All right, guys, if there are friends and family members that you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry, because it's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones, because it's not complicated. Everybody deserves something new. So, AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details. Back with Lewis Riddick next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And as we get ready for Thursday night football and the weekend of football in general, we head out to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to ESPN NFL analyst, one of the analysts in the Monday night football booth for us, Lewis Riddick, joins us now here, Lewis. And we appreciate the time as we head into Thursday night football tonight. So many people have had eyes on Mac Jones, an impressive win for the Patriots last week against the Browns. What stuck out to you about the rookie quarterback, especially as of late, that you think has really given this Patriots team a chance to succeed?
Yeah, I think it's the fact that he really is getting such a good grasp of the offense is allowing him to play calmer, faster, more efficient, and now let what is widely considered to be, I would just say, average to above average physical ability really shine through, which quite honestly, I think that undersells this young man as far as his athletic ability is concerned and his arm strength is concerned. No, it's not quote unquote unique, transcendent, generational, whatever hyperbolic word we want to put on it. He is physically gifted enough to perform at a high level, and you're seeing it start to come through now because he's already ahead of the game from a mental standpoint. You can see that, you know, anybody who knows New England's offense knows that it is highly, highly sophisticated with a lot of variation from play to play and, you know, pre-snap and post-snap. And it'd be overwhelming for any young quarterback to learn. But this young man seems to really have taken it all in, digested it, and now he's starting to be able to let his talent shine through on top of what has already been a pretty darn good offensive line, three-headed, very physical monster at running back, and a dominant defense, which is in mid to late November, exactly how you would want it if you were Bill Belichick.
And, Lewis, I saw your comments on Get Up about the ceiling with this Patriots team being the Super Bowl, and I couldn't help but think back to when I was watching the Man in the Arena podcast and documentary mm-hmm. earlier this week, and just looking at that 2001 Patriots team and seeing so many different parallels with that team yep. and this team, particularly when it comes to personnel, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Like, at this point in the season, are you ready to say that this is the team that you trust most in the AFC from a week-to-week basis?
Yeah, I think, Chris, you know this. You know that Bill prides himself on, well, I shouldn't say prides himself, he demands consistency. So when you're talking about trust, that's obviously in terms of football, and what we're talking about, it's synonymous with consistency. And that's how they play. You know they're going to play fundamentally sound as far as technique, pad level, footwork, hand placement, physicality. They're going to play that way week in and week out. They're going to play assignment-conscious football to where they're going to commit less and less mistakes as the season goes on just because people become more and more comfortable with what he is asking them to do. So you know that they're just going to be in it. Their defense is going to keep them in it. Over every game now from here on out, you're going to have some tough sledding. And on the offensive side, it's going to be the same way. You know that they're not going to, that Mac has already become better at not giving the ball away, protecting it at all costs, taking sacks if he needs to, throwing it away if he needs to. Receivers, all these new receivers that they've got, you know, between Aguilar and Bourne and Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, I mean, that's four guys right there that are playing key roles coming into a new system that's very complicated. They're going to make less and less mistakes. So, yeah, this is the team that, as we move down the stretch, may not be the flashiest team. But since when, other than the 2007 team, when did Bill have a flashy team when he was winning all these rings?
Fair point.
It wasn't about that. And I remember being in scouting in the early 2000s and going 1 through 53, wouldn't want that guy, wouldn't want that guy, wouldn't want that guy. But then you add them all up and you go, well, damn, they're Super Bowl champions, though. You know, I mean, that's just the way they were when they were winning championships with Ted Johnson, when Teddy was there, when Roman Pfeiffer was there, when Willie was there, and Chris Slade was there. I mean, Lawyer Malloy, Otis Smith, to Bucky Jones, Terrell yep. Buckley. I mean, all these guys, people would say, well, you know, you can get better than him. You can get a better guy than him. You can get a faster guy than him. But that's not what he's after. That's not what Bill's after. And this team is constructed the same way. Not to say that they don't have some Pro Bowlers on this team, because they do. But that they're constructed as a team. They're not a collection of individuals. Bill builds teams. And that's what he's doing right now. And we'll see tonight. We'll see tonight if, after a couple days now of everybody being on him and talking about, you know, myself included, if they go down to Atlanta on a short week on the road, and they can perform. They can perform. We'll see.
Kane Angola Jr. here talking to ESPN Monday Night Football analyst Lewis Riddick on the Goodyear Hotline. Lewis, in a much less stable environment, the New York Jets have named Joe Flacco the starter at quarterback for this weekend, a move that a lot of people have criticized here. How would you handle the plan for the Jets quarterback situation for the rest of this season going forward?
I don't mean to laugh, Mike. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I really don't. I mean, yeah, Joe has a lot of experience. Yeah, Brian Flores is going to heat you up like a microwave because that's just what they do. Okay? And he has puzzled and battered and beat veteran quarterbacks just as well as young quarterbacks. And it's not like Joe Flacco is going to have every answer to what he's doing, okay, and what they're going to do to him. Matter of fact, Joe Flacco is a sitting duck. He ain't running anywhere. So I'll tell you what, he better be getting that ball out of his damn hand in like 1.5 seconds. Because if he doesn't, he's going to take a beating. That's just a fact. I mean, so I mean, I get theoretically what you're trying to do and what you're trying to save your young quarterbacks from. But look, I'm not in their building, man. You know, and I'm not. I don't know. I don't really know. And when you're as unfamiliar with the situation and how their decisions are made and what process they go through to make these decisions, it's reckless for me to sit here and go, you know, it makes sense or it makes, you know, no sense at all. But on the surface, I respect Joe Flacco. I respect anybody who's played in the league, period. And I respect anybody who's played in the league, played quarterback, and won a Super Bowl. But, man, this just does not seem like something where he's going to have some kind of ridiculous advantage over everyone else simply because he has experience. That just doesn't sit well with me in that regard. But we'll see.
Lewis, on Sunday, we're going to see Dak Prescott and Pat Mahomes face off for the first time as the Cowboys visit Arrowhead. And it's a big game for both teams. But I wanted to ask you, who do you think we'll learn more about in this particular matchup on Sunday?
I don't think any doubt it's Kansas City. Even though they're at home, even though they are, you know, they played in the last Super Bowl, won the Super Bowl previous to that. Patrick has gone from being a league MVP to a Super Bowl MVP to a guy who, you know, basically we gave him a pass last year because the offensive line was so decimated once we got to the Super Bowl. Given all that and given everything they've accomplished down there and as good as Andy Reid is and as much as Dallas has not accomplished in 25 years or whatever it is, we're still going to find out more about KC because it's a team that we can all see is in a state of transition as far as how it is that they're going to be allowed to play offensively now on a regular basis. It's almost like for three years, people were like, I can't believe it. Patrick can't keep making those plays. He can't keep hitting those deep shots. He can't. We're just going to do what we do. Eventually, he'll run out of, you know, like, well, no, actually, he's not going to, so you better change up. So people have changed up on him, and Kansas City's almost like in a state of shock right now. Like, no, we throw the ball deep on everybody. And I don't care what you do. I'm still going to push it down the field, and it's cost them. So they're in a state of transition. The question is, do they really believe it in terms of how they need to play now in order to get to where they want to get to, which is the Super Bowl? Or was last week simply a case of Gus Bradley does what he does, an inordinate amount of single high safety, plays right into our hands. We know what the Raiders try to do, and everybody's now going, hey, the Chiefs are back. Because the test will be different this week, offensively, and then defensively too, given what they're going to be facing with Dak in that running game.
The test is going to look different. We'll wait to see if Patrick Mahomes can line up and pass another one of them. Lewis, we always appreciate the time, my friend. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Check out Lewis Riddick and the rest of the crew on Monday Night Football each and every week. Coming up next, though, let's stick with those Kansas City Chiefs here. Was it a flash in the pan, or are we finally back to buying in on that Chiefs team that I have tried to quit so much? Next on ESPN Radio. Sitting around in the studio where we do the show in here, looking up, we got TVs all over the place here, and they're usually tuned in on any number of ESPN programs. And here on Canty and Golic Jr. today, I'm looking up in the middle of PTI right now. PTI.
Mm-hmm.
And I look up and see Booger McFarland, and all I see is the heading below him underneath the NFL logo that says, are there any really good teams? That is the point of the season. We've arrived midway through. We have thrown our hands up in exhaustion, Chris. Have no clue who anyone really is at this point.
Nah, man. We got an idea of some teams that are going to be there in the end, right? We know the Tennessee Titans are going to win the AFC South. We know that the Dallas Cowboys are going to win the NFC East. We even know that the Green Bay Packers are going to win the NFC North, and I would dare to say the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will win the NFC South. So we do know there are some good teams. We know there are going to be teams. We know some of the teams that are going to be in the mix when it comes to title contention in the playoffs. It's just that there are a lot of other teams that could go either way at this point, and we're watching that play out in real time because this is the point in the calendar where teams start to position themselves to go on a postseason chase.
Yeah, it's been really weird. I saw this per ESPN stats and info. Through week 7, the league's top 5 records belong to NFC teams. The Cardinals, the Packers, the Bucks, the Rams, and the Cowboys. Some of the teams that you just mentioned, Chris. They were a combined 30-4. Since week 7, they are 6-8. Arizona had a surprise win against the 49ers without Kyler, only to turn around and get bodied by Carolina. Tampa and Los Angeles have both lost consecutive games, and every NFC team has lost at least once in the last 3 weeks. No NFC team, that conference we talked about being the best, currently has a win streak longer than one game. It has been all about upsets as of late, and it's thrown us into a bit of a tailspin. So, Chris, I feel like this Chiefs and Cowboys game is kind of a chance for us to come up for air, right? Because this Cowboys team, we've talked about how multiple they are, what their defense has been able to do. Well, their rushing attack hasn't been as efficient as of late. Hopefully Tyron Smith will be back and steady a lot of the ship. For the Kansas City Chiefs, maybe their offense found a reprieve last week against the Las Vegas Raiders, but we're not 100% ready to buy in. And so I don't think either team really needs, quote unquote, this game, Chris, but I think it's a big measuring stick performance for two units, especially in that Dallas offense. And I think in a lot of ways that Dallas defense as well.
Well, I think Kansas City needs it a hell of a lot more than the Dallas Cowboys do, because Kansas City's in a division where everybody's over 500. So I think there is a lot more competition when you're talking about a game and a half separating the team that's in the cellar from the team that's in the pole position. I think there has to be a little bit more urgency. So, yeah, I'm interested to see whether or not what we've seen from that Kansas City Chiefs offense last week is going to be more of the norm moving forward, or whether that's the outlier, whether that's the aberration. As far as the Cowboys are concerned, I think they've got a great record. They're playing good football. But you have to ask yourself, with a team that hasn't beaten a team that was in the playoffs last year, like, are we really sold that the Dallas Cowboys are a true title contender? At some point, you're going to have to beat some good teams on the schedule. And so I'm looking forward to this point where they actually have a chance to measure up against a quarterback like a Pat Mahomes and see exactly how far that defense has come, and to see whether or not this offense can continue to be as dominant and be as consistent as their talent would suggest they're capable of doing. So, I think this is going to be a fun game, because this is going to tell us a lot about the direction that both teams are headed in. But for the Dallas Cowboys, I'm a little more intrigued as to what it'll look like, because I feel like this is one of those big games on the road where they could potentially be tested.
Yeah, Chris, the only reason I'm really not sold on the Chiefs needing this is just for exactly what you said. It's a logjam in the middle. There's margin of error for everyone in the AFC right now. And for this Chiefs team, it's much more important to come out looking like you did last week structurally than I think it is for you to actually win the game. It's almost like when Dallas lost that close one to Tampa at the beginning of the season. And we said, all right, we know what you look like. We know what you smell like. We know what this is going to be going forward. Just because you didn't get the win doesn't really matter right now, because the stakes just aren't there yet on the AFC with as much season as we've got left.
No, I feel what you're talking about. But, I mean, for the Chiefs, it's not just about being able to win their division. It's about being able to compete for a championship. And so I think when it comes to just getting into the playoffs, they don't want to necessarily be in a wild card, because that's not setting them up to have the kind of success that they're looking for. If they've got to play in that wild card round, they'd rather have that game at home than being able to have to go on the road.
Lots at stake in that matchup. We're looking forward to that this weekend. But coming up next, lots at stake for the NFL with one big-time decision surrounding a player's vaccine status. Next.